am left with all this love and all these dreams and no place to put them.
Hi, everyone. This is Carly from Daytime After Dark. Welcome to a great another edition of Daytime After Dark, produced by Maggie and Carly and Tony, and written by Carly, and produced and acted by everyone. Tonight, and the number to call in to talk to Mr. Robert Newman is 347-850-8721. And I'm going to bring him on. You know him as the very handsome Joshua Lewis on Guiding Light for about 30 years. You've seen him in so many good plays. And we recently saw him on one of my favorite TV shows, Chicago Fire. So let's bring him on. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Okay, well, oh, good. Was I right or wrong about you were there for 30 years on Guiding Light? Was I wrong? No,
you're pretty close. I was, put it this way, over a 28-year span, I was there for 24 years. How's that sound?
Okay. We have a lot of talk about tonight, and I loved you on Chicago Fire. I really did.
No, thank you.
But I got mad at you. Your character. Your character, because when you walked into Bowdoin's office and you go, "Do not ever do that on my man," I'm like, "Oh my God, that's Robert."
I get cast as a lot of bad guys these days, so this was just another sort of nasty guy. Yeah.
Well, I didn't see your credit name in the beginning of the show, so then I kept watching, and there you were. And I'm like, he needed to be a little more respectable to another fire chief. How was that? Mm-hmm. I mean, are you going to be coming back? Have they asked you for a couple more times, or what?
Yeah, when they pitched it to me, they pitched it as a recurring, one of the nice things about working for those guys is they do not only Chicago Fire, they do Chicago PD and Chicago Feds. And the kind of role that I played there, which was a fire chief from a different department, he could be on any of those three shows, you know, depending on what kind of story that they're trying to tell. So I think they're wrapping up their season for this year, but they talked about it coming back a few times, maybe next year. So we'll see. You know, sometimes with television, you just kind of sign on to something and you go, okay, let's see if this works out. And if it works out, that would be great.
Well, yeah. And so when you tape Chicago Fire, do you tape it in Chicago or do you tape it in New York or L.A.? How does that work?
Well, yeah, they shoot in Chicago. They have just an incredible facility there where they shoot all three shows simultaneously. So you walk into wardrobe and they immediately start with, which show are you doing? You know, and you say Chicago Fire and they're okay. Oh yeah. And you're this guy and you're doing this thing here. It was a little tricky cause I was in the middle of doing a play in Albany, New York. And,
that's fine. You will.
Yeah. We worked it out so I could do it on my one day off, which was a Monday. so I did the matinee in Albany at 2:00. I got on a plane that night, flew to Chicago, got there quite late, checked into a hotel. The next day around noon or so, they called me to the set and did a wardrobe fitting. And by 3:00, we were shooting the scene. By 6:00, I was done. And Tuesday morning, I was on a plane back to Albany and back on stage Tuesday night.
Well,
so it was a pretty fast deal. Yeah.
I mean, you must get frequent flyer miles because as an actor, you guys will go wherever the book is. So what does the airline know you by now because, you know, you travel so much? No,
because I travel for a lot of different, you know, I did a lot of traveling for the union when I was the vice president of the union. I've done a lot of traveling for work. You know, I fly to you know, we shot Homeland down in Charlotte, shot NCIS in Los Angeles, and then theater work that I do either in Michigan or wherever. But you don't really, you know, I'm on different airlines all the time. And I think in a, it would be nice in a world where they get to know you and they treat you great, but I'm just another customer to them. I will tell you, though, you're a fan of Chicago Fire. Is that correct?
Yes. Uh-huh.
I can tell you that Iman Walker is one of the nicest guys you can possibly imagine. And, he was really, really a sweet guy to work with and very giving. And we had a long talk about that scene before we shot it between him and myself and the director. We talked about, you know, what kind of character they were looking for and what they want this guy to be. And so we did it.
Well,
and it was
a really lovely
experience.
Well, I was afraid you guys were going to go blows in there. I'm like, okay, Bogdan is not going to accept this. Someone going into his file department. And, you know, and I'm like, come on, fight. And you didn't fight. I mean, okay.
No, we talked about, though, that if the tables were turned, he would probably do the same thing. He would come marching into my office if my men had done what his guys had done. And we talked about that, you know, these are guys with a mutual respect for each other and they're going to go after each other from time to time, but you know, they both do something very, very difficult for a living and very dangerous. And I think that they respect each other. They just, every once in a while, they have to, one of them has to smack the other on the wrist, you know?
Well, yeah. And it's, you know, I loved it. I mean, like you said, you could go on Chicago PD now, Chicago Men, Law and Order SVU, because they're all by the same people. But you said you did a thing for NCIS LA. When did you do that?
I've done that show twice, playing the same role. I play a Navy Admiral on the show. And in both cases, I was, you know, when they're in the main room, this is the one with Mark Harmon and those guys, when they're in their sort of main room and they're talking to people up on the screens, that's where my scenes took place. In one of the shows, there was a pilot who had gone rogue that was going to fly a plane into an aircraft carrier. So they were talking to the head of the FAA, and they were talking to a Navy admiral who ends up, you know, and they're talking about him possibly having to shoot down the plane.
Well,
and that's another, there's another great group of people to work with. Mark Harmon is the nicest guy on the planet. And
Mark Harmon.
A really lovely group to be with. Yeah, they're really sweet.
And were you also on NCIS LA with Mike Cuban's Chris O'Donnell? Okay, I'm going to get you a job on there next. Because I want to, you know. But I want to get you take on a couple of current daytime events because you were in daytime for so long. Have you heard that they are not doing the Emmys televised this year? Do you know that?
They are not televising the Emmys?
No, they aren't.
No, it doesn't really surprise me. It doesn't surprise me any more than the cancellation of Guiding Light didn't surprise me to a certain extent either, because the business is the business and it all comes down to numbers. If they couldn't get the numbers to work right, then they're not going to televise it. And I think probably with there only being four soaps left, I get that the daytime Emmys also deal with game shows and talk shows, but I think the draw for those shows, outside of maybe Oprah and Ellen, the draw for the daytime Emmy Awards really was about the popularity of soap operas, and that's why they could broadcast it on CBS or NBC. I remember a time when they would swap it, so it was on NBC one year and CBS another year and ABC another year, because they all wanted their sort of shot at it. But, you know, the business has changed dramatically. With only four soaps left, they probably don't get the audience for the daytime Emmy Awards that they used to get.
Well,
doesn't surprise me.
Well, no. And when you, did you guys know when Guiding Light was going to be canceled? Did you guys get a heads up oh, will you guys, like, come in one day, oh, by the way, we are going to be canceled in a couple of months? How did that go down?
Well, I think everybody knows that we were told on April 1st, April Fool's Day, let me try to get the numbers right in my head. I guess we were told on April 1st of 2009,
mm-hmm.
July, August. And we went, I think we shot our last episode, though, in September. Does that sound right?
Yeah,
October,
yeah.
Maybe? Yeah, it was
mm-hmm.
later. So we did have several months' notice. You know, that I've talked about that day before, April 1st.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very unusual day. And we were shooting. I was on location in PPAC that day and actually arrived to the set late morning. And a producer came over to my car immediately and pulled me out of the car. And I was so jarring. I thought maybe something had happened to my family or something while I was driving to, because it was an hour drive, you know, to PPAC for me from my home. And he said, I just want to give you a heads up. They're announcing the show, the show's cancellation. And in a weird way, I was almost relieved because he was so disturbed that I thought something really, you know, terrible had happened.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I went, oh, well, okay. You know, it was like, whatever. And then Ellen Wheeler and one of the head guys from TNG came out to PPAC, I think at 1 o'clock or something, and they made an official announcement. I was not terribly surprised by it. I think we were all maybe a little taken aback because, if you recall, that we had just gotten back from a very successful, well-done shoot down
mm-hmm.
at Universal Studios in Florida. And there was just a really positive feeling about a lot of things that we had worked our way through the difficulty of adjusting to this new format that nobody seemed to like, including those of us who were shooting in it, but we were getting better at it. And the show was kind of looking better and coming together in a better way. And then all of a sudden, bang, we got this cancellation thing. And it was not entirely unexpected, but I had many times had people say to me, oh, they're not going to cancel the longest running show on television. And I would say, sure they will.
Well, and
once they decide they're not making enough money, they're going to cancel it. That's the way it
well,
goes.
I mean,
the way the business is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with CBS.
Yeah.
With CBS, you know, both of you guys were gone in a 1 year span. Underwood tunes in another wood.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm, like, thinking, okay, and, you know, I didn't think any of the soaps would ever go off air. But saying
yeah,
that,
but
when Santa Barbara, you were on Santa Barbara too, right?
For a very short time, yes.
Yeah.
Back in 1983-ish or 4, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
5, maybe.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, I remember my grandma crying and saying,
yeah.
They can't sue Santa Barbara. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's when I knew that day that no matter what, a soap could be canceled. When I saw that, and then when I saw Passions get canceled, even though I wasn't watching Passions,
right.
For me, I'm like, okay, no one's safe. No one is safe. And I've been thinking how to get Robert Newman back in daytime. And I figured out a role for you on B&B, Days of
okay.
Our Life, and Zeno Hospital.
Okay, all right.
And which one would you like to work on? Because we can't have like a Robert Newman treating day and do that.
I
and you know
that.
Because and how did you play go with Kim? How did you, how was it?
Oh, Gypsy,
you know,
you're talking about.
Yeah, Gypsy, yeah, with Kim.
Yeah, it was great. She was absolutely fantastic. I'll tell you, she was lights out fantastic in that role, and she did a great, great job. And, you know, we had a lot of fans come to see the show, and that was lovely. It's the second time we've been on stage together. In fact, we had just been on stage together a couple weeks before that, doing a very short Stephen Sondheim review with the Delaware Symphony Orchestra in Wilmington, Delaware. But prior to that, we hadn't been on stage together for many years. The last time was Curtains that we did with Paper Mill Playhouse. Maybe 3 years ago. Yeah. So it was good. And, you know, we both had done Gypsy before with different people. And mm-hmm. so it was nice to do it, to get on stage together and do that kind of show together. And I was very, very proud of her. And, you know, it was a terrific show, terrific experience.
Well, yeah, and, I think you guys should do a play on the same time next year. Play, okay, it's a movie too. But I don't
know
why.
Play.
Yeah, but that is, like, my favorite little movie about time, and everyone's like, the color is cheating. I'm like, no, it's not. They have this meaning every year. And, you know, and I love the song. I always have the song in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You guys could do that, and you guys would be really good.
Yeah, I imagine we'll be on stage together from time to time. We do a lot of different things, and often our schedules conflict with each other, so we can't be doing things together. In fact, I think she's opening in a play next week, I think, in New Jersey, and I'm off to start rehearsals for Man of La Mancha in outside of Philadelphia. So, you know, sometimes our schedules are just sort of in opposite places.
Well,
but every once in a while they come together, and, you know, that could be as good a play as any to do together.
What were we
going to ask?
Yeah, everyone asked me to ask you, back in the day when, you know, you guys had some free time, you know, doing breaks. Did you guys ever play pranks on each other over at Guiding Light? And did you play the pranks, or were the pranks on you?
Well, you probably know the answer to that question already, because I know you've had Michael O'Leary on the show before. Right?
Yes.
And Michael was pretty notorious for playing all kinds of pranks.
Oh,
never
no,
on
my
me,
Michael.
Because I threatened Michael quite well when he would do things to other people. I'd just turn to him and say, if you ever do that to me, I'm going to take your head off. And he would be like, okay, all right, no problem.
You threatened
but he
my
would
Michael?
Do things. Terrell Anthony was a big prankster.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot of very funny things with people. We went through a period where there was all kinds of fighting going on with water guns for whatever
mm-hmm.
reason. I remember that was happening. And, you know, but the other side of daytime is that there's so much work that has to be done, and it's got to be done so fast. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, that there's not a lot of time for, you know, the kind of stuff that you're talking about. You're not going to find a lot of really heavy drug activity in daytime television. You're not going to find a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. And I think that that's because it's just such an enormous amount of work that everybody has to do. And you really have to be on your game.
Well, yeah. And,
yeah.
And I know you were on Santa Barbara too. And did
mm-hmm.
you and A. Martinez, ever cross paths over there? Because
oh, yeah.
he was on there. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah
he's a really good friend.
Yeah. On that show, I actually took over a role that Joseph Bottoms had played. It was Marcy's evil long lost husband or something.
Ooh.
And I was on the show for, I think it was just a 6 week contract. It was just in and out. And during that time I was trying my best to kill them both. And the big plan at the end of that storyline was I was going to kill them by throwing them into a shark tank at what was then called Marine Land in Southern California. We were on location shooting that sequence. And A and I became very good friends during the shooting.
Aww.
We really enjoyed each other's company, and we had a lot of laughs on the show, and Marcy and I worked together very well. You know, and then she came on Guiding Light a few years later for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, yeah, that whole experience with Santa Barbara was really lovely. I really enjoyed it there.
Well, yeah, and, you know, and you were on General Hospital, too, back in the day. like a long time
back
in the day?
Yeah, that was actually they were the same time frames because that was the first time I left Guiding Light. So I was in Los Angeles in 1985 and 1986. And in 1985, I did a short gig on General Hospital. In 1986, I did a short gig on Santa Barbara. And then I also shot a pilot, and I also did a couple of other things.
Oh, well, you know, I when the Guiding Light got to end, I always thought you and Kim served God like a reward. I mean, I know Kim and you both had daytime Emmys, but I always thought, well, they should give Zoss and Reba a daytime Emmy for the most screwed up, complicated love story in the whole wide world.
I don't think they have that as a category, but it's a
well,
nice
I know, but you guys have that great love story, except when, you know, the whole, when, you know, she was the whole Dolly was a pig.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That storyline for me was hard to really take serious. I'm like, okay.
Well,
but we
it
voted,
was hard.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard for us to take serious, too. I mean, we had a lot of struggles behind the scenes with that storyline. It was a very difficult thing to shoot. We all knew that we were doing something that wasn't really, you know, in the that didn't really fit well into the daytime genre, let's put it that way. You know, that we were sort of branching into a whole other thing. You know, it was very, very difficult to stay focused at work when we were shooting that storyline. It was a problem for some of the other actors because whenever the clone was on, we would have to shoot several scenes twice. So we would shoot all the scenes between Dolly and Reva. We would shoot them with Kim playing Reva, and then a double playing Dolly, who was only shot from behind.
Okay.
And then they'd take a break and they'd go shoot some other set, and then we'd have to come back to that same set and shoot everything now with Kim playing the clone. And so that made the day go a lot longer for everybody because everybody would get out later in the day because we would double shoot these scenes.
Oh.
So it was problematic, and it was I remember other actors weren't happy on days when their character had to interact with the clone. They'd
mm-hmm.
be like, "Oh God, I've got a scene with the clone today," you know. And it was just a tough story to shoot. Again, I think Kim was terrific in it. I think she, you know, she really, you know, rose
mm-hmm.
to the opportunity and did a great job with it. But overall, it was a very unpopular story. We were getting lots of negative mail about it. People very upset about us doing something about human cloning. They were very upset about
mm-hmm.
that. And, you know.
Well, and
but
that
those,
was the time before Facebook or Twitter or, you know,
right.
all we had was the soap magazine. So we didn't know who was leaving, who was going, until it ended up on our screen. And you read the soap opera digest. But back in the day,
right.
soap opera digest was slow to what was happening on the soaps. So I would read it, and I'm like, huh? That's how it happened. So, I mean, but I loved your little banter with Alan Spaulding. I thought sometimes you guys, you know, we're going to just kill each other. But you guys have this respect for each other. And I just thought, you know, I would love it to you two end up doing a play or whatever together because you guys were really on your A game every time you had a scene.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I really do. You know, Kim and I think we trusted each other a lot on camera. And
mm-hmm.
we also, I think, you know, Kim and I have also talked about just when you're shooting the scene, you believe the scene. And so I think that she and I were both invested in the relationship between Josh and Reva in a similar way that you were, or a similar way that someone who watched
mm-hmm.
the show would be. And also I have to give credit to the writers who over the years, you know, they missed a few times and they did a few things that were questionable between Josh and Reva, but
mm-hmm.
but they did a great job of establishing their relationship and also establishing a tremendous history that really, for the most part, we didn't even see on camera. Because there was all kinds of discussion about what Josh and Reva were like in high school and what when they were kids. And we even did flashback scenes from when they were children and that kind of stuff. So they really built a very solid, solid foundation for the two characters. And I think that helped us with everything that we did on camera.
Well, it did. And I still miss the barbecues. I tell Michael this all the time on Facebook. I'm like, okay, I want a hamburger, please. And I want a well done. And he's like, okay, but those scenes, he told me, took hours and hours to really do because you had almost everyone there on those kind of days.
Right.
So it would be like a 12-hour day or 13-hour day.
And, those were funny days, because they were really long days. And they were fun to a certain extent. And then at some point they would stop being fun. At some point, like in the ninth hour of the day, it's like not fun anymore. But, the nice thing was we were all together on the same set.
And yeah.
A lot of characters interacting that normally wouldn't interact with each other, and that was always fun. They were always very, very long days. Yeah, sometimes we'd wrap at midnight, midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my gosh! And then would you have to be back the next day at like 10? Would they pull that on you guys? Like, oh gosh.
Yeah, one of the worst that I remember for that was, do you remember we did a thing with Shane having a baseball game?
Yes.
It was some crazy idea that one of the producers had, and we shot it in the studio, which was weird because that, talk about a perfect thing to shoot outside of the studio and somewhere else. But we wrapped that at 4 a.m., and I had to be in the next morning, so they sent me to a hotel for 3 hours, and I was back in the studio at 7 a.m. to shoot
that
morning. Yeah, it was crazy. That was one in a hundred, rarely happened that way.
Like all the actors I've had on, they're still always telling me either it's a wedding or a funeral or some kind of event. You are looking at 15-hour days. No matter how you want to slice it, it's not. You don't have to 4 hours. You have to do it for a long time.
Yeah. Something you do. It's just somehow you work it out, and, everybody survives it. We get it done.
Well, that's true.
It's always a wedding. I remember there was a fashion show once that we shot, and that went till 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that. I remember that. And again, it would start out kind of fun and people in a good mood throughout the day, and then around 4 o'clock, everybody's sort of crashing and tired, and then by 9 o'clock at night, people have had enough and we're just trying to get to the end. And then we had a whole other problem in PPAC with all that location shooting we were doing because we were fighting the sun.
Check.
Well,
so we had days in PPAC where we would run out of, we still had 5 scenes to shoot and the sun's going down. And what do?
Pray that it works. I'm going to let some callers on because I don't want them to kill me, and they will kill me. 9-1-10, you're on the air.
It's me, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby.
Hello.
Hey, I think I remember you did a play in Raleigh a couple of years ago, Raleigh, North Carolina, because I'm from Fayetteville.
I did a production of Annie.
Yeah, because the last time I talked to you, we got cut off before I could finish my sentence. I do apologize for that.
Sorry about that.
But I just want to say you came on the local news in Raleigh and talked about it a little bit, and I was just like excited that you actually did this after all years of not seeing you on daytime television on Guiding Light, because I thought about doing this, but I think the week you came, I went up there a week before, but I just kind of just felt like I should have just waited another week and just gone up to see the play and just met you, shook hands, and got an autograph and stuff.
That would have been great. Next time I'm there, do that.
Yeah, yeah. But I do want to say, speaking of Kim, I know there's been a lot of talks about maybe her coming back to daytime over on General Hospital because they're looking for a big name from daytime, a veteran in post about 60. And I think she would be perfect, but I would love to see you on General Hospital with her so you can recreate that Josh and Reba magic.
Thanks. Yeah. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah, but I'll tell you right now, when I heard the news that Guy and Light got canceled, I thought at first it was an April Fool's joke, because I thought somebody had to be playing a prank on the cast, and Ashton Kutcher, a punk, was behind this. But obviously it wasn't. Because I'm sure that your younger co-stars were more familiar with Ashton work from the television show.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, because I thought this was actually an Ashton Kutcher setup. I thought, because I wrote to Gina a couple of days later, right before she left Guiding Light to head back to One Life to Live, and as you know, she's now Phyllis on YNR. And told her that I thought this was a joke, but and it was just sad to see it go. And throughout the rest of the summer, I wrote to everybody else on there, and I just almost cried during the last episode because I think I was listening to a song called "Back in the Highlights" by C. William Winwood, and I thought, so this is it. So once it was over, I just thought, well, I'm never going to see it. But however. However, with the success that Emmy have done on GH as Lulu and Carla and Lawrence have done over on Bold and Beautiful and Gina has done on YNR, I think that some of that Guiding Light magic still lives on in those names right there. So I'm sure that maybe if we can add somebody like Kim or even get Mandy or maybe Caitlin or Bonnie back on daytime, it would be awesome to just see somebody from Guiding Light or As the World Turns back on daytime television somewhere down the road. Because I watch Days, and I would love to see one of those guys or gals back on television in some form or fashion. So hopefully it will happen. And it was great to talk to you again this time, not with technical problems, but hopefully, like, if you come back to the Carolinas, I'll be happy to just get a chance to go up to Raleigh to play, and maybe we can just chat afterwards, because you came to Fable during a meet and greet for Guiding Light back in, I think, 2003, and I missed that opportunity at the time.
Okay.
So it would be great to just come back for that. So,
okay,
Bobby,
well, hopefully that'll work out. Thanks, Bobby.
Okay, and all right, you have a good night. And Carly,
okay,
you
Bobby,
back
I'm
going to
put you on hold. Okay.
Check.
Okay. 954. You on the air? Hello. Hello. 954. You there? Hello. Okay.
Edo.
Yeah. Hi. Hi.
David.
Oh, hi, David.
Hi,
did
David.
You want to ask him?
Yeah, I love you on Chicago Fire. You were great on there.
Thank you. Thanks, I appreciate
it. And I wonder, what was it like to work with your father, Barry Gates, who played you down for your fire, father? What was he like?
Well, Larry Gates was a mentor to me and kind of a father figure to me in many ways too. I mean, he was really just an extraordinary individual, and he taught me more, I think, about the art of acting than I ever learned in any class or in any job I ever had.
Yeah.
Just his ability to be so honest with everything that he did. And then also his ability to just make fun of himself. I always liked that about Larry, that he, you know, there were moments with HB where he would just play right into that whole HB hooping and hollering kind of thing. And he didn't,
yeah.
I remember him saying to me once, you know, in order to be the best actor you can be, you have to be willing to make a complete horse's ass out of yourself. That was one of my favorite Larry Gates quotes. And it's true. you know, and I kind of bring that to a lot of other things that I do. I like making fun of myself when I'm on stage, and I think it relaxes the audience, and I think we all have a good time together. And Larry Gates taught me more about that than I think I could ever learn in any classroom. And when he passed away, I had, in his last few months up at his home in Connecticut, I would go up there once a week or so and just sit with him and talk with him about life and about theater and about television and about all kinds of things. And when he passed away, it was a very, very difficult time. And they kept the character alive for a while, mm-hmm. which was odd. And then I think maybe 3 or 4 months after Larry had passed, they decided to, I think they were contemplating recasting HB, and I think they realized that they really couldn't do that.
Yeah,
but there are some characters you just have to let go of because the actor is just too completely defined, is too connected to that character. And then they had HB die. And I think I've talked before about the day we shot. In fact, I just watched the episode of HB's funeral. So somebody had posted it on Facebook, and I watched it. And I was crying through most of it watching it. It just killed me, you know, because there was so. I remember that day, and I remember Jordan Clark and Kim Zimmer and myself. We would be prepping for a scene in the kitchen or something, and we would be telling all these jokes about Larry, and we'd be laughing and telling stories about how he did this or did this other thing, or remember when he did that. You know, we just crack up about stuff, and then we'd cry about him, and then they'd roll tape, and we'd do almost exactly the same thing with HB, where now you had Billy and Reva and Josh sitting around talking about HB and then crying about HB. And it was really, it was like this perfect combination of real life and art. And I think everybody loved Larry. And, you know, I put him in that category with Bill Rorick and Charita Bauer and Chris Bruneau. And, you know, there were just some people, and these were all, outside of Larry, those were all people that were on the show when I joined the show in 81. So they were all mentors to me, and they all taught me, you know, volumes that I could never have learned anywhere else. But they also represented a generation that I just, you know, you kind of feel like they'll never come this way again. And then somehow you realize later that you've become that to some of the younger actors that are on the show now, you know, which is kind of weird too. So, but Larry was an extraordinary individual and one of the finest actors I've ever been with. It was a pleasure working with.
Sounds like it.
Okay. Thank you, David.
Thanks, David.
Couple more calls.
Okay.
So, okay. I'm going to put you back on home, David.
Thanks, David.
Okay. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, David. Okay. Hey, Tony.
Hello, Carly. How are you doing?
Good.
Robert.
Yeah.
Good evening, and thank you for stopping by tonight. I really appreciate that.
No problem.
I wanted to check with you I've got something I wanted to ask you as an actor myself, but I'm curious about. But there's some confusion that I'm trying to sort out. Just very quickly, when you were on GH, you played Prescott Harrell or Peter Harrell?
Prescott Harrell. There was another actor, I think, that was Peter Harrell.
Judson Scott, yeah.
And this was his brother.
I got you.
Or something.
Okay.
I mean, that was a long time ago, but I remember there was another actor, and he left, and they wanted to replace, but they didn't want to replace him in the same character, so they created an evil brother.
Yeah, I tried to find a connection with that online, and I just couldn't find. Nowhere did it say related, you know, a different role or whatever. But your stage acting that fascinates me. And you mentioned you did a review, a Sondheim review with your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Did I hear you correctly? What was the name of that?
We did one of Sondheim's reviews called "Putting It Together." And
okay.
it was
okay.
Thai vocalists. Kim Zimmer was one of them, and I was one of them, and three other local people. And then we did that with Delaware Theater Company, and they brought in the Delaware Symphony Orchestra to do all the music for it. It was absolutely gorgeous. It was just a one-weekend event that we did with scripts in hand. It was that kind of a thing.
Yeah,
a couple
yeah,
days of rehearsal exactly. because Sondheim music is extremely complicated, as you probably know. but it
yeah.
was absolutely, yeah,
that.
It was a fantastic experience.
I was fortunate enough to catch Bradford Anderson, who is General Hospital, and he and his wife
mm-hmm.
were here in Sacramento, and they did
a
thing called Marry Me a Little, which was, you know,
mm-hmm.
Just a great show, a little jarring to see, you know, Bradford come out on stage for the first time, and I'm literally in the second row, and with that kind of thing happens.
Yeah.
You see somebody on the screen so much. But I wanted to ask you though about I saw a clip on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
and I see that you know where I'm going with this. I see that you did Captain Hook,
yeah.
in Peter Pan.
Great
job. I love it. Great job.
Thank you.
I always wonder, you know, you've got some pretty heavy hitters in the past, and it was that is the absolute one role I told myself years ago when I was done, I will never ever go out for that, for the simple reason that I would not be able to get Cyril Richard out of my head. Because, you know, he's just that sound is so over the top sound is so iconic. And I loved your take on it, at least from Hook's roles.
I faced that with many roles that I've done on stage, though. You know, I played Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof 2 years ago. And,
uh-huh.
You know, I was a huge fan of the film with Topol growing up. And, of course, everybody knows Zero Bustel did it. And I'm off to do Man of La Mancha in next month outside of Philadelphia. This will be my second time doing that role. And again, you've got these ideas in your head of people you've seen before. But what I've found is that at some point in rehearsal, and it's usually fairly early in rehearsal, you have to let that go. You really have to dismiss that entire image out of your head. Because I obviously can't do what Zero Mostel did. I can't. I'm not built that way. My body's not built that way. My voice isn't built that way. I can't play it in that way. And all that I can do with any of these roles is bring to it as much truth and as much honesty as I possibly
mm-hmm.
can. But it's got to be in my voice, and it's got to be in my, my physique and my way of doing things. Captain Hook, I got to tell you, I don't think I've ever had, I think that is the most flat out fun you can have on stage in any role. It is, you know, there are challenges to La Mancha, to Don Quixote. There are challenges to Tevye. There are challenges to Daddy Warbucks or, Charlie Anderson and Shenandoah. Those are all different kinds of challenges. But for flat out, and I'll also tell you, in case you ever do the role, there's a blessing and a curse to that role, and it's the same thing. And the blessing is you can get away with anything in that role, and you can just improvise and play all you want. But it's also a curse, because at some point in rehearsal, I remember the guy who played Smee, he and I were coming up with so many bits, and finally, you know, at some point we turned around and said, you know what, we can't make the whole play about bits. Even with Captain Hook, you have to figure out a way to be honest and tell the truth.
Time to rein it in,
I don't know if you noticed in that clip, one of my things with that portrayal of Hook was I went to the director once and I said, I think, this was before we opened, I said, I think I need to do something with Hook's good hand. And he was like, okay, what are we talking about? And I said, well, I just think he takes really good care of his good hand. And he said, whatever, just, you know, whatever you want to do, you know, figure it out. And the next morning I came in and I had bought all of this sparkly nail polish, Disney sparkly nail polish. And I had each nail painted a different color. And I had been looking for like little plastic children's rings, you know, and I couldn't find any. And suddenly I stumbled on Ring Pops. And so I had a Ring Pops, on each finger I had a different ring pop. and I came into rehearsal with that, and he said, "I love it, but it's too much. It's like now we don't know which hand to look at. Is it the hook or the end?" So I ended up with black fingernails, and I had a ring pop that I wore that I changed the color of for every scene that I was in. And in that clip you're talking about, you see me stop in the middle of the monologue before the song, and I just start sucking on that ring pop, and the whole audience went absolutely batshit crazy over it. And there was a point later on in the show where in the curtain call I would throw out a bunch of ring pops to all the kids in the audience. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a really fun role and a really fun – it's a tremendously fun show to do. So I highly recommend it.
I love Paul Scheffler's take on that.
Mm-hmm.
I love his singing, but I wasn't, you know, it's like, and I swore I would never ask this, but the last person to do it of any notoriety, which was on television. I wasn't
thrilled with Christopher Walken. No, I wasn't.
Me neither.
I turned to my wife about halfway through. I turned to my wife and I said, "I don't know what character he's playing, but it's not Captain Hook." I don't know what the character is, but that's not Captain Hook. So and I love Christopher Walken. I've always loved him, but I just felt like he was just in the wrong role.
I felt it was a bit miscast, just a bit.
Yeah, I think so. And I thought about, you know, they really could have, you know, there's some contemporaries, like, for instance, Kevin Kline, probably they could have cast Kevin Kline and he would have had the same star appeal as, you know, as Chris Walken. I think they were looking for, I think they did it purely on sales, on star appeal. But I think
probably.
They picked sort of the wrong guy. You know, there's a lot of people that would have brought in the same or similar kind of audience as Chris Walken. But I just think they missed, that's all.
I just real fast, and then I want to let you go for other people. But I'd see that
sure.
You were from the Lee Strasberg Academy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I spent
you
2 years in Strasbourg in
there,
Los
yeah.
Angeles. Yeah, my joke about that is I spent 2 years learning the method acting, and then I spent 5 years getting it out of my system.
Yeah,
because
I'm,
ultimately I don't feel that there is. I don't think there is anything that's a method. I think all of us have to. You know, I also studied at ACT. I studied with Malcolm McDowell. I studied with Charles Nelson Reilly in musical comedy. I studied with a bunch of different kinds of people, plus the training I got in college. And I just sort of picked and chose all kinds of different things from all these different teachers. And eventually you have to come up with your own way of making things work.
What works for
and,
you,
and that's really the bottom line. And I still go back to class, by the way. I go to Michael Howard, who's one of the great teachers of all time, who's still alive here in New York. He's from the Strasberg days and the Uta Hagen days. And I still go to his class from time to time. It's a master's class that I step into from time to time and do a scene, you know.
I'm second generation Stella Adler.
Okay.
I didn't study under her. I studied under one of her students, Edward Claudio, who lives here in Sacramento.
Yep.
It was the whole thing about the no method, stop, don't method.
Yeah.
I love the thing about the truth. You said that, you know, you just try to get the words off the page and do it in truth and sincerity and honesty, and it'll work.
There's an old saying, I think it's credited to Mickey Rooney, who said, "Stand up straight, look the other actor in the eye, and tell the truth." And that's very oversimplified, but I think it's actually true. It's just, I think telling the truth is everything.
Absolutely. I'm going to jump off here. Otherwise, Carly's going to pull the plug on me. But
okay.
I'm absolutely
nice
to speak. Well, I can keep going all night, but
I know.
I'll just be quiet.
Then you might get in a little trouble, but not that much, Tony. Okay, I'm going to put you on hold and bring on Maggie and
hello.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi, Meg.
Hi, everybody. I'm totally enjoying this interview. I still love you, and I want you back on TV.
Okay. I'll make a note of that. Thank you.
Okay. Except I do have one little bone.
That's
Chicago
Fire. Chicago Fire. It's my house. You came into the house like it was your house.
Well, as I used to say to Guiding Light fans, I don't write the show.
I know.
They give me a script, I read the lines, and I kind of like that guy, though. I like that they kind of made him a little quirky and cocky, and as you probably heard me say earlier, you know, the other actor, Iman Walker, and I, we had a long talk about that scene, and we decided that, I think I said this earlier, we decided that if the tables were turned, he might have done exactly the same thing in my house.
True.
That every once in a while, these two guys just go after each other. And I actually, you know, I thought it might have been fun to end the scene with something like, you know, I think the last line I said was, keep your men in line. And I would have liked to have followed that with, like, see you Wednesday night at the poker game. You know, like they yell at each other, and then everything's fine. And then they go off and they do jobs. Because what they do for a living is very... And by the way, that was the first time I think I've had a mustache on television.
Yes, I remember you having one.
The story behind that was I showed up on the set with my goatee because I was in the middle of doing this play in Albany, and the makeup artist said, did you have that for your audition? And I said, I didn't audition. They just called me and asked me to do the role. And she said, oh, well, you need to hang on for a second. And they brought me out to see the producer. And what I didn't know was that firefighters can't have anything on their chins. They can't wear beards.
No.
The ceiling of the masks. It affects the way the masks seal that they have to wear. So there was discussion about whether or not they were going to just let me get away with it because they knew I was doing a play. And I had to be honest with them and say, it really won't affect the character that I'm doing in the play. And they were like, great, shave it off. Yeah, but they wanted me to shave it down to a mustache instead of down to nothing. So
nothing. Well, my daddy was one for many, many years.
Okay.
And he would have kicked you in the butt if you wore that.
Well, I was, I got to give the credit for being true to their, you know, to the show.
Sure.
And I have friends who are firefighters who watch the show, and they've said, well, some of it's right on the money, and some of it's a little sketchy. Which I think is probably true of all television shows.
Exactly. But it was so weird because you started out and I go, oh, come on. That cannot be Josh. I mean, all these years I've loved him. He cannot be playing this role. And then it grew on me. You actually grew on me, which
good.
I thought was wacky.
In 3 whole minutes.
Right.
I'm playing a lot of bad guys these days. I really do.
Yeah,
you know, the play I was doing in Albany was a very ugly character. It was a very ugly character, you know, who is accused of raping a woman in the middle of the show, and it turns out by the end of it that he actually did, and it was ugly. It was a nasty role, but I'm drawn to these kinds of roles. I think part of that's from playing a good guy for so long. I'm intrigued by the complexity of bad guys, you know, and what makes them tick and why they think the way that they do. And so I do a lot of that kind of stuff now,
I love bad guys. I think, bad guys in the story, like my Sonny on GH, whatever, it seems that it's harder when they come across that way than if you're a nice, sweet, lovable, fuzzy person. And I think it gets your juices going, whatever your acting style, better. And I got hooked naturally on Bert and Papa Bauer. And grandmother hooked me. And it was family back then, the stories. I mean, we call them stories back then.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. And to see you on that CIS and different roles, it's like you grew. You do evolve, don't you?
Of course you do. If you stop evolving as an actor, is that what you're talking about? Mm-hmm. If you stop evolving, I think you're dead.
Yeah,
you know, I don't have a lot of respect for actors who kind of think that they know it all. And you know, I like challenges. I'm constantly pushing the envelope for myself, taking on roles that I'm not tailor-made for. You know, when a director called me to play Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof, I said, I said, you do know, you know I'm Norwegian, right? He was like, yeah. He said, sure, I know that. But he said, Robert, what I know about you mm-hmm. is that you're going to bring, you know, your heart to this character. You're mm-hmm. going to play the father who's struggling with his marriage, and you're going to play the father who's struggling with his daughters, and the man who's fighting battles with God, and the man who's suggesting these. You're going to bring all of this to the role. And he said, we'll make mm-hmm. you look like Devia. Don't worry about that. And it was beautiful. It was absolutely one of my favorite productions of anything I've ever done.
Mm-hmm. But
Can you
ever bring it to Chicago?
I've had opportunities from time to time to work in Chicago, and if I end up taking one on, then I'll post it on my Facebook page and all that stuff.
Great. That I can see.
Yeah.
Okay, Meg. Meg, I'm going to put
you
on hold because we have one more call for him.
Okay.
To 718, you're on the air.
Hey, Carly and Robert, it's Lori Baker calling again.
Oh, hi, my God, how are you? Oh.
Hey, good. So, yeah, my question for Robert is, you know, you've had so much experience in theater, you know, along with all those years in Dying Light, you know, so much theater and musical theater. I was wondering, were you always interested in musical theater in your career, and who was an inspiration for you? Was there a certain actor, musical theater, that inspired you to go along this path?
Well, I've always loved the genre. I mean, it's always just been sort of in my heart and my soul. And I'm one of those guys, I'm such a sap with it. I'm one of those guys who, the minute they start an overture of something, I'm getting all sort of weepy inside, you know. I like the format of telling story through dialogue and through song. Yeah, and I think that there's things that can happen with musicals that don't happen in the same way in non-musicals, I guess is the best way to put it. And even the ones that I choose to do, I'm really looking for honest, complex characters. You know, if you look at Don Quixote and even somebody like Tevye, even playing opposite Kim in Gypsy a few months ago, Herbie to me is a very complex guy, a very complex character. And I'm always kind of shooting for the truth, whether it's in dialogue or in song. To answer your question about how I got sort of going on this kind of thing. When I took my degree in theater at Cal State University Northridge, I wasn't trained as a vocalist. And my primary work there was really more with classics, with Shakespeare and that kind of thing. But they had a very strong musical program, and I would audition for things just because I was kind of dumb and auditioned for things, you know. And I found myself on stage doing musicals and started developing kind of a love for them. Then I took this, after I graduated, I was cast on Guiding Light. And so a lot of my theater work kind of went to the wayside, and I stopped singing for about a decade or so because I was doing the soap and getting married and raising kids and doing all these other things. And then I was watching a production of Guys and Dolls, which is a show that I had done in college playing Skye Masterson. And on Broadway, they did a revival where my friend Tom Wopat was playing Skye Masterson. And I was watching him and thinking, I really want to do this again. I miss this. And so I started studying vocally again, just very quietly. I didn't talk to people about it. I didn't tell people what I was doing. And for about 2 years, I just studied with a very powerful teacher in New York, and then I worked with a vocal coach to start getting some songs in order. And then at some point I decided to go ahead and, you know, stick my big toe in the water, and I submitted myself for a production of Nine that was being done up in Boston, and they amazingly cast me in it. And there I was, you know, back on stage doing that kind of format again, and I just love it. I just do, and I feel like one of the great blessings since Guiding Light went off the air, I miss the soap very much. I miss the work that I did on the show, and I miss the people I worked with. But since then, in these, what's it been now, 6 years or 7 years, I've really had the opportunity to play these really amazing roles in both non-musicals and musicals. Honest to God, there's nowhere else I'd rather be than on stage singing some amazing song and having the audience right there with you. When I'm going off to do La Mancha again, and I'll tell you, when you're on stage in the context of that play at the top of the second act and you're in all that, you got the wig and the beard and the armor and everything else on, and you go into the song Impossible Dream, there's just nothing like it. It's just an extraordinary experience.
Yeah, well, as sad as it was, with seeing the cancellation of Guiding Light, I think for you it must have been, like you're saying, a real turning point where it gave you the opportunity to, pursue this dream. And it seems like you've been very successful with all the different roles around the country that you've managed to work.
Yeah,
so congratulations.
Thank you. I've been doing fine. I mean, some of my friends from the show, whenever I say, oh, man, I haven't worked in a little while, they're like, Robert, shut up. You work more than anybody does. Just shut up. But it's the hard thing about leaving a long-term soap opera is soap operas tend kind of make you into a little bit of a workaholic. Mm-hmm. And you get really accustomed to working pretty much every day, and you know exactly where you're working next week and next month and next year. Whereas the life I lead now as an actor, I often don't know what the next project is going to be until I sign on to it.
Yeah, that's the blessing and the curse, I think, for a lot of actors working in the soaps, is you have the security, but then
you do.
Then you get tired of playing the same role all the time. So,
and just quickly in defense of that, I've said to people before that I didn't think of it as playing the same role, because Josh would evolve. To me, playing Josh at 40 was very different than playing Josh at 25. He was no more the same character at 40 than I was the same character, from when I was 30 or 50. He constantly evolved, and the storylines, I think, became more and more complex and more mature as we all got older, as life does, I think.
Did Guiding Light give you leeway to give opinions about how to play the character? Or did you always just sort of have to just go with wherever the script led, or were you ever allowed any opinions?
Well, you always have to go where the script leads, because even if you think about the logistics of it, what I'm shooting today, they wrote a month ago,
mm-hmm.
and they're writing next month. So the writers and the production are on different time schedules. So it's not like you get a script one day and you go, oh, my God, Josh can't do, Josh can't clone Reva, even though I would have said that. If they had asked my opinion, I would have been like, yeah, this isn't a good idea. Let's not do this. But by the time it was pitched to me, they had already written the story, And so you always have to go where the script leads you. But having said that, I wouldn't say that I had leeway, but I would say that they trusted me. And I did argue from time to time with a director over how a scene should be played or something like that. But I shouldn't say argue, we sort of discussed it, and we have different opinions. But they trusted me quite a bit, and they really let me have a pretty free rein to play scenes however I wanted to play them. I never felt constrained there.
Uh-huh. Well, it was a pleasure talking to you, and
thank you.
Luckily, the Man of La Mancha.
And,
thanks for calling.
And you're always welcome and call back in. So I have two remaining questions for you, but I just got, we have one more people on the switchboard. Can you take it really quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Hey, David. Make it fast, buddy.
How you doing?
Hello.
I'm sorry I missed pretty much the entire interview. I was running late with a bunch of stuff, but I just wanted to say hi and welcome you to the show. Carly's a great interviewer.
Yes, she is.
You know,
thank you.
Seriously, I double echo what Carly says. You're welcome back anytime here. She does. She's phenomenal with every single person that she interviews. And so it's a pleasure to hear what people have to say when you know when she interviews them. So anyway, I wanted to thank you for explaining a little bit about from your perspective what it's like about when you know as an actor you have these roles and how the writers are like a month in advance and you know what I mean. I was just listening
mm-hmm.
to that. And I want to thank you for expressing that because a lot of the time people, I don't want to say don't understand, but I do think that they don't connect the time factor from what they see and what's coming down the pike. You know?
Yeah.
And then the actors who work very, very hard at what they do get the flack.
Yeah, you know, I've certainly been the victim of that before. I try not to take it too seriously. My mantra to people is, I don't write the show. You know, I would say over and
mm-hmm.
over, I appreciate that you didn't like this thing that Josh did today, but I don't write the show. You know,
uh-huh.
and I just come in, say my lines, and I go home. That's pretty much my entire job description. But it, you know, and there was the thing is there is a certain amount of give and take that happens on the day of shooting something, and you know, Kim and I certainly had moments when we were able to cut this line or that dialogue, and directors would cut dialogue, or you'd get in and they would say, oh, by the way, the top half of that page is cut for time. There was also an issue.
That's another thing I noticed, but a lot of the time.
Yeah.
That sometimes you can tell when something's been cut for a reason, you know, for time
yeah.
mostly, but it does
yeah.
sometimes have an effect on the story, I think, when certain stuff that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you would see an air show and you would see a scene that you shot, you know, and remember, sometimes we were 6 weeks ahead of what was even airing. You know, usually we're more like 2 weeks ahead, but or behind, I should say. No, we were ahead, 2 weeks ahead. But you would see a scene that you shot 2 weeks ago, and half that scene would be cut.
Mm.
And they do that because the show had to be 44 minutes long. You couldn't
right.
get
mm-hmm.
around that number. It had to be 44 minutes
mm-hmm.
long. So if scenes
it's,
went
it's
longer.
Hard. It's hard to tell. Yeah, I do that all
yeah.
the time. I'm a writer, so. From the writing perspective, sometimes when I'm trying to write something, I have to be very careful of not a time constraint. I don't write for a TV show or anything like that, but sometimes when I'm writing a story, I have to. It's painful to me sometimes when I have to cut something because you know the chapter's getting too long or so on.
Yeah.
But you know, but sometimes there are some things you wish you could keep because it tells the story a little. Makes things a little clearer as you tell the story, even if it does
yeah.
go on a bit long. I'm a big fan
of the Lord of the Rings trilogy
that
Peter
God.
Jackson
oh.
shot. So we're all on the same page, right? We understand Lord of the Rings.
I actually
think that their theatrical cuts were better than their extended versions that they put on the DVDs. I think that that's a really good, if you're writing film, I think that would be a very good thing to look at to see how. I think they were better, shorter. As a lover of the novels, you know, I love the novels, so it's great to see those scenes.
David,
yeah.
Boyd, we have to cut it. So, David, you asked you two questions, and so I'm going to ask Robert.
Thank you, David.
A couple of questions.
I just want to say real quick, though. There's something you can probably find it on YouTube. I recommend you watch this. This says, remember the Harry Potter series?
Mm-hmm.
J.K. Rowling and Daniel Radcliffe did a thing a while back. There was a discussion about the Harry Potter movies and the movies versus films and
mm-hmm.
that what we're talking about is, you know, about how there's some things that cut or change in the film versus the book. And it's a fascinating conversation on this, and I strongly recommend you watch it.
Thank you.
I think it's on YouTube by now. But I thought you wanted to hear about that, yeah.
Okay,
so
David, I'm putting you on hold. Before we let you go, Robert, you are welcome. Welcome back anytime, you know, and let us know if you are doing like a primetime show, and we will be more than happy to premiere and promote it. And I just want to ask, what is in your refrigerator right now?
What's in my refrigerator right now?
Yes.
Why do you ask that?
Because it's like a nice ending of a...
well, let's see. There's some leftovers on the bottom. There's some eggs. And there's some veggies. There's yogurt. And I think that's about all I'm seeing.
No alcohol?
Well, there's wine.
Well,
if you count wine as alcohol... But yes.
Oh well, and I know where you can buy the wine from. You can buy it from your old friend, Laura White. She has Stanley Sunrise.
That's true. I know. Yeah.
And
I know.
Before I go, thank you for coming. And if you had to have one last meal, what it would be? If you know, the whole one last meal thing.
Oh, that's a rough one. I could say something horrific like Taco Bell or Five Guys or something like that, I suppose. In-N-Out Burger. I think it would be something. I think it actually would be something like that. It would be something really, really bad for me. If it's going to be my last meal anyway, what the hell?
Yeah, that it doesn't really matter when it's your last meal.
There you go.
Okay, thank you so much. And when you
thank you.
Another thing, please come on here, and you can tell Kim, you can tell Kim she's welcome on here anytime.
I'll pass it on.
Okay, thank you. Have a great night.
Okay, thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Robert Newman of Guiding Life fame, and... We are going to do a quick overtime, like about 3 minutes, because that's all COVID can handle tonight. And everyone is back on. And
hey, guys.
Hi, Cardi.
Okay,
hi, Cardi.
No. Okay, this is going from Dr. David and Bobby. You guys got to be on a little best behavior because COVID has said, okay, I want to ask, like I asked Robert, Wyvern, what is in your refrigerator, you guys, and what will be your last meal?
Oh, man. You got me on the refrigerator part because we got, I got milk and condiments and lunch meat in there and sometimes leftovers in there. But as far as my last meal, this is hard, but I don't know. I guess maybe as my last meal, maybe get that Wendy's or Burger King 4 for $5 or 4 for $4 deal that they have. That'll probably be my last meal. The Wendy's 4 for $4 deal, especially now that they have a chicken BLT added to the options between that and a burger at Wendy's. I would definitely go for Wendy's, but I think. For my last meal, since I live nearby and I haven't had it in about two or three years, would be Sonic.
Yeah. We have a okay. Okay. So, Maggie, what would be your last meal?
Well, mine would be lobster and a beautiful bottle of vino, which I could drink the whole bottle.
I knew you would. Yeah,
and tiramisu for dessert, and maybe some chocolate mousse, and Galliano on the rocks. It's Italiano liqueur that we have after the meal.
Ooh, okay, and what's in your refrigerator, Mommy?
Okay, what's in there now? A little bit of pasta, my cup of cold, cheese, milk, eggs, butter, chili, and I think, turkey in the freezer.
Oh, okay. Tony.
I have no idea what's in the fridge right now because I'm back in the recording studio, but last meal. First appetizer, pâte de foie gras, followed by main course of bœuf bourguignon with haricot vert, pommes de terre gratin, for dessert, mousse au chocolat avec l'orange with grand marnier.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay,
and
David.
Cooked by myself.
Okay, David, your turn. Dr. David. David. Dr. David, yeah, what is your last meal? David?
Did that, David?
No, but I'm asking you, what is your last meal? David,
I'll pick anything in the world.
Which David
are
you talking to now?
I will say Dr. David and the other David. David, what would be your last meal?
Chicken and macaroni and cheese. With my kitchen, with refrigerated a salad and oranges and ice cream.
Okay, well, I will tell what's in college booth as well. And cream seeds, and I got some chicken noodles from a Greek place today, and Coke and Sprite, and there might be a bottle of wine in there, and cream seeds, and all the condiments you can think of. And if I had to do my last meal, okay, it would be probably from the Olive Garden, stuffed mushrooms, the lasagna, and then if I had to go for a dessert, it would be my mom's angel cake with mocha frosting in it. So delicious. So delicious.
Mm.
And a couple of announcements before we go. We're going to have another busy week on Daytime After Dark because,
there we go. What happened?
I don't know. Next, Monday we will be having Alyssa Mom, who are we having on Monday?
Alyssa Willis. Mm-hmm. She was
Courtney from... And that will be 12:30, Tony and me time. And
it
will
be 12:30 Pacific?
Yes.
Oh, great. I can probably make it to talk to Alyssa because I've been wanting to talk to her for years, and it would be great to just actually get a chance to maybe talk to her since I wanted to meet her during the Super Soap events and never got a chance to go down to Florida because of money and time during that time. So it would be great to just talk to her.
Oh, Carly, how did that recipe turn out for you, the stuffed mushroom recipe?
I haven't made it yet. I'm going to make it very soon, but I have been not up to anything right now, right, Meg?
Not at all.
Other announcement is, well, not an announcement. I love what's going on in General Hospital. And, Tony, are you a Sunday and Coldly fan?
I'm a fan of the show just as the show. I'm not a fan of any particular couples or characters, but I appreciate what Mo and Laura do with that role. They've got an awful lot of chemistry. Yeah, so I dig what they're doing, but I wouldn't call myself a fan of theirs necessarily.
You answered that question wrong. You answered that question so long, didn't he, Maggie?
Diplomatically, maybe.
Yeah,
you did.
You
could have said Carson fan.
But, see,
am I supposed to just say, yes, I'm a fan? Oh, absolutely. Yes, oh, absolutely.
Well, yeah,
fan.
Why?
Yes,
Wee! That's like, no, I'm
okay,
sorry, I would live and breathe Carson. If I could have Sunday and Carly on my TV 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, I would. Because they are what Look and Low was in the beginning.
Maybe.
And they are better than Look and Low, I think. And please don't send me hate mail on that one.
You
yeah.
know, I was never able to ask you a question earlier because I was still muted about the food thing. I'd like to try and do that now. You were asking about what's in the fridge and what would be my last meal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just cleaned out my fridge, so seriously, I got rid of the petrified Chinese food. you know how it is. I'm a bachelor, so although I cook
mm-hmm.
a lot, sometimes I also get taken. I finally cleaned out the fridge last week, and that was quite the experience getting all the expired stuff out of the fridge. So I have all current stuff. What's in my fridge now is just some milk, water, some juice, and some meat, you know, like some chicken breast and so on. Little things that I can make with it. But if
mm-hmm.
I only have a last meal,
mm-hmm.
but I would, you know what I would do? I would probably want to do like a 2 or 3 week feast. You know, like how back in times, you know, people would have these feasts that would last for like weeks.
Mm.
You know, that's what I would do for a last meal, a big one long feast that just never ends for like 3 weeks.
You don't worry about calories or anything.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
So,
if you're gonna, if you're gonna die,
just
throw it out. No, except you guys. Okay, my grandmother's last meal, and I'm kind of still not forgiving my grandma on this. My grandfather's last meal was liver and onions. I mean, okay, he did not know he was going to die that night, but that was his last meal. And I was really upset by it. And then, you know, my grandma claims he loved liver and onions, but how can you love a liver? I mean, I get the onion part, but how can you not love the onions? I mean, the liver part.
I asked that question once to someone, to a friend of mine, and you know what he said?
What?
He said that if he was going to die anyway, he'd like to try human meat sometimes. Just if he was going to die the next day, he'd like to try a piece of human meat, you know? That was his reaction.
Oh,
I'm not sure if he was joking or not, but, you know, that was his reaction. If I die
tomorrow. Downer potty?
Yeah. If he's going to die tomorrow, he's
going to
eat human meat before I die.
And I forgot to pick on one more thing on my list is fondue.
Mm-hmm.
I need to have my fondue.
Yeah, put that on my list, too. And my calzone out of the freezer.
Well, you know what? You and I are probably going to go at the same time.
Probably
buy something. I'm kidding. But, you know what? We could do something dumb and then bam.
No, we're not going to do dumb and we'll eat. Forget that.
Yes.
What thing is right now, we need to eat all the chocolate we get our hands on. Because my grandfather never came back to tell me if there was chocolate in heaven.
Oh. Yeah.
And I
got to
get myself.
Well,
yeah,
I wouldn't imagine that we would know or understand what heaven would be like. I mean, we only understand, think of how a seed can't really imagine what a tree would be like. Okay?
I disagree with you, David.
Yes, but I'm still waiting.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Granny promised me the same thing. He will let me know if they had Coke and Sprite in heaven, and he hasn't got back to me.
I didn't ask him about the Coke. I should have.
Yeah,
Coke
well.
Coke is my main ingredient. I guess I could put a sack of it in my shroud. No, but I'm going to be cremated, so it wouldn't do any good. It'd be all melted.
Well, all I got to say is about that. You know, I know we probably are really depressing people tonight, but you know what we need to have these lightning conversations every once in a while. And it's like a cocktail party. And this brings
instead of having guests on the show, why don't we just do a talk episode, just us hanging out and talking during the time for an episode.
Okay.
Right.
David.
I think we did that a couple of weeks ago when we had scheduled a guest and he never showed up.
And we have the whole round.
Great to do something like that again.
Oh, and you know what? I still don't know what the hell happened now.
I don't either.
What?
Oh.
What?
You still don't know?
Nope.
He never called.
You can't tell me.
He never wrote.
Well, I told you what my thoughts on that were.
Well, yeah, and you know, but it was strange.
Yeah.
Well, no, but it was just like the most strange thing ever happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's never happened before. I found it very odd.
This is original.
And I was wanting to ask Jason a lot of things and congratulate his buddy, his TV daughter Brooklyn on her Emmy nomination. But I just felt like he might have been busy with Y&R or he had a scheduling conflict and forgot to tell us at the last minute.
Oh, yes. Oh, and before we go, I know not a lot of you like country music like I do, but in the Country Weekly I got today, we got, there was an article about Steve Butch and Jonathan Jackson's new restaurant in Asheville, and it was a pretty good read.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I'll check that out.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, and by the way, you guys, I'm addicted to game shows. I could watch game shows all day long lately because I think it's making me a little more smart. And I got mad at Jeopardy the night because I had the answer, but I didn't do it in the correct form. So I'm mad at Alex Trebek. I want his job.
You have to do it as a question. The answer.
Yeah, and I didn't ask the question.
I think a couple years ago I wanted to do maybe Wheel of Fortune because you got a chance to win $1 million to get that $1 million space, win the round without hitting bankrupt, and win the game and win the bonus round and get the $1 million prize. I thought that would be good until I realized some friends that knew a couple of people that did the prices right ended up having to just not keep their prize because of the taxes and stuff like that. So that's the only downfall I have with some of these game shows, that you can be unable to keep a car or go on a trip or keep the cash because you got the government and taxes to deal with later on.
So what? Come on, if that were me, I want a bunch of stuff. Okay, I will put in someone's name, and I will put in the Caribbean, and bam.
A car?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, but I think I was watching the old Joker's Wild on YouTube. The original, not the 90s one, not the Phil Collins,
the real one,
with the original host from way back in 1983 on YouTube the other day. And I thought it's just accurate that some of the questions that were big that are more accurate compared to now. And I think if GSN or CBS or some sort of syndicated market wanted to revise the Joker's Wild, Car Sharks, or Tic Tac Toe, is
well, yeah,
to do that now and ask more questions up to date and stuff like that, or even revive the Magic game. Or bring back the Magic game. That would be great.
Angel Network, that's in the morning.
Guys, as much as I love you all, I think we both end it because, you know, we've had a really long week on Daytime After Dark. And then we will be back on Monday at 12:30 for Alisa Willis. And then we might get another surprise later in the week from someone, too.
Okay, well, I can be able to make the 12:30 show. I'm not sure, depending on what time I get off, if I'm going to be able to hang around with you guys or not. But I'll just be in there enough time to just to talk to Alisa and just leave, and just just get back to work if I can, Charlie. But
yeah.
I'll let you know
Either
by text or Twitter.
Well, yeah, it would be funny if we accidentally got you fired.
That would
be funny.
I'll make sure I IM you on Facebook before I leave for work that I'd be able to do that, because I still felt bad that I couldn't talk to Lisa a couple weeks ago because of technical problems with my phone. So I just felt bad. But I get a chance to talk to Lisa because we haven't heard from her in 2 years on General Hospital. It would be great to maybe see her back on television, maybe even back on Days, like we saw with Marie Wilson, because she, like Marie Wilson, did a couple episodes and they left. Maybe we might see Alisa in that same position. I'd be happy to make
it. But Alisa Willis was on there a year ago, right, Mom?
Right.
Two years ago.
Before her movie was released on Lifetime.
Right.
It was a very good movie.
Right.
But she got a baby now. I believe that's why she's cut back on acting.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you have a 2 or 3 year old, I mean, come on.
Because I think right now it would be kind of out of the question to have her play perhaps be recast as Summer or Abigail at this point in time because of the age difference. Maybe have her back on Days as somebody new.
Well, yeah, I don't see her as the Abigail recast because, you know, like people were saying about Rebecca Hurst, when, you know, on the contract they were freaking out. And I'm like, wait a moment, no.
You're not leaving.
Yeah, no, but with all the rumors, but, you know, the thing is, when you recast someone like Rebecca or, you know, Abigail, do it in their own age demographic. I don't want to see her wake up one morning and get older. Because really, you know, Thomas cannot be 5 in a couple of minutes. That's how I look at it.
And secondly, you cannot have an actress the same age as Melissa Reed or Jen. That would make it kind of awkward. It'd be like Jen had a sister. That Abigail was not her daughter, but her sister. That would be a little bit awkward.
I don't think she wants to get old either. I mean, they'd have to age her.
Because have Rebecca Hurston signed back on as Elizabeth, the first person I thought of right away was Martha Madison, since she just left Days, that would probably replace her on a full time basis instead of 2 or 3 days. But I'm just glad Rebecca's still with DH.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah,
I didn't think she was going anywhere.
Yeah, I
did. We
didn't.
What, David?
Yeah, it seems to me though that everyone talk, you know, people are divided when it comes to Rebecca Hurst and Elizabeth. Some lovers, some haters, you know, particularly the character for all the things that Elizabeth does constantly over and over again. I'm not going to get into love or hate.
Wait. If we are going to go after Elizabeth, this is not okay.
You're not hearing what I'm saying. I'm saying that the character is a very, she either gets a lot of fans for her, or there's a lot of people who don't like Elizabeth. You know, I'm not going to get into one way or the other, but I'm just saying here that I'm glad that she's staying on. I'm glad that Rebecca Hurst is staying on. But I also think that, I think the people who are negative about you know, the character or say nasty things about the actress on, you know, on the boards and on Twitter and all
horrible.
That. Yeah. You know, I think they need to really take a step back and remember what that guy who's just on the adventure said. You know, that, you know, if you don't like something, you know,
shut up.
It's not the actress's part, actor or actress's fault. They just do their lines and then they go home.
Mm-hmm.
That's
well,
what
that's true.
I hate them being bashed.
But we still end you because I don't want Block Talk to cut us off. And Tony, I will call you over the weekend because I have another great idea in my head. And
I'll make sure I Facebook you. I'm sorry, Tony. I'll make sure I Facebook or text you Monday around noon my time to just let you know how long I can stay on the show with Alicia and you tomorrow on that day. All right.
Okay,
well, good night, guys.
Night. Bye.
Good
bye.
Good weekend.
Bye.
Night.
See ya.